Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, an investigation of anti-Semitism and its ramifications for Jewish people opposed to the war in Iraq, a live interview with community activists returning from a protest against the Monsanto Corporation, and a collage of sounds from the massive protest here held here in Urbana-Champaign on Thursday. Due to technical difficulties, our headline section is missing, so we will move right into our first segment. IMC reporter Ondine Gross brings us the following investigation of racism, how it ties into participation in groups, and ways we can attempt to keep hate from dividing us.
Racism, anti-Semitism, bigotry, discrimination, oppression. It starts with a thought, a belief, a whisper among friends, talk behind closed doors, then a shout, a scream into a microphone. Words are printed, spread widely. Actions are taken. People are hurt. I saw words, stinging, ugly words, anti-Semitic, spread widely. I want to ask questions. Are there more of these beliefs, whispers, talk behind closed doors, shouts, or is it me? I asked Alan Potash if he had seen more anti-Semitic activity. He's the director of Hillel, a community center for Jewish students and people wanting to learn more about the Jewish community.
I clearly have seen a rise of anti-Semitic stuff, starting with the university and the newspaper, the Daily Illini, with a letter that greeted the students the first week back after the semester. And the Daily Illini created a title, Jews Manipulate America. I find that to be quite offensive. And the letter itself called for the removal of all Jews from power. Okay, if that's not anti-Semitism, I don't know what is. At the beginning of the school year, there were many chalkings on the quad on campus that has taken a step farther than the previous chalkings that were clearly anti-Israel for the most part and anti-Semitic on a smaller part, where this year they've become much more connected to the anti-Semitic part.
I also spoke with David Green of the local anti-war, anti-racism group AWARE. He had a different perception.
In this country, in the United States, anti-Semitism is basically dead. It's basically over and done with. Now, there would be one caveat to that. I realize that many Jewish students are made to feel uncomfortable now on college campuses. What I do understand is that some Jewish students, not all, but some Jewish students are quite uncomfortable with the fact that they have to deal with criticism of Israel on a regular basis in college life. I don't see that as a bad thing. I see that as a good thing, okay? Because there is more truth out there now about the Israel-Palestine conflict, and more sides are being heard.
Al Kagan, also of AWARE, thinks it is Arabs and Muslims who are being discriminated against, and that's what we should be talking about.
To us, anti-racism means supporting people who are being discriminated against, and right now what that means is there's special registration for 25 different countries, people from those 25 countries, mostly Arab and Muslim countries in the United States, and they are looked at as some kind of possible threat, so they all have to go and get fingerprinted and get interviewed at in special registration. Some of the times people have gone into those offices, especially in Los Angeles, people have been arrested on the spot, families have been separated, people have been held incommunicado, and those kind of things. That's what's going on. We've been working to set up a fund at the University of Illinois for students and faculty and staff who are affected by special registration and give them some legal help and advice if they need it. That's the kind of thing that's going on. That's the kind of repression that's going on. That's the kind of discrimination that's going on in the United States now. It's anti-Arab, anti-Muslim discrimination. The people that belong to the mosque in this community are scared. They're very scared. They are upset. They can't get jobs. When they do get a job, someone tells them, you can't wear your headscarf on your job. You know, that's the kind of discrimination that these people are getting. People are upset. To talk about anti-Semitism and talk about the kind of repression that's coming down against people from Arab and Muslim countries right now is absolutely, it's not equal.
What about Jews who want to join others in anti-war efforts? David Green says,
to belong to this anti-war movement in general has meant one of the problems that has come to the forefront is this recognition of Palestinian rights. And I think that there are many Jewish people within this anti-war movement who accept that at various levels and understand that at various levels without wanting to sort of create this, I think, disingenuous balance between Israel's right to exist and Palestinians' right to exist. Israel does exist. And they do have their rights. The Palestinians don't have their rights. That's what the focus should be on.
I also asked Alan Potash his opinion about the place for Jews in the anti-war movement.
It's a very interesting question because that was one of the first thoughts that I had when America was progressing towards this action towards Iraq, is that there really is not a clear place for Jewish students who are pro-Israel, pro-American, pro-peace, to find a place in the peace movement, because so many people anti-war with Iraq are anti-Israel, and it's very uncomfortable, at least in this community. I haven't explored it much in other communities, for somebody who is very pro-Israel to be a part of a protest. And you can see this on the Quad, that when I see the same people protesting Israel one day protesting America the next day, it's very difficult for me, if I even agree with their anti-war stance, to be with them. You know, one day they're yelling at me, I'm not going to join them and yell at somebody else or be a part of that protest. I've heard many people on the left say it's okay to hate somebody because I'm right.
I was thinking about the irony of being in a peace movement but thinking that suicide bombers are freedom fighters, and that's okay. There's been placards saying that in anti-war protests around the country.
I can't even respond to that. The fact that giving up your own life is one thing, but when you give up your life, knowing that your mission is to take somebody else's life, that's not about freedom.
I read words to David Green and Al Kagan that have appeared on signs at anti-war protests. Zionism is Nazism. A Jewish star equals a swastika. Jews control the media. Congress, another occupied Israeli territory. Destroy Israel. Hitler didn't finish the job. We speak for a long time. I listen to their criticisms of American and Israeli policies, of the disparities between those with power and those who are powerless. I also want them to talk about the signs, though. I want them to say that they're unacceptable. I want them to say that they have no place in a peace movement. I tell Alan Potash that I've studied the Holocaust, that I know that when it becomes acceptable to mock or disparage another group, the results can be disastrous. People forget to make distinctions. Democratic Senator James Moran of Virginia said that Jews were driving the country toward war in Iraq. He later apologized. How do we put a stop to such intolerance and hate?
Well, getting to know each other. I mean, it's pretty basic. I was on the phone yesterday with Len and Libby Troutman, who run it's called the Living Room Dialogue, and they've been doing this for over 10 years, and they're kind of the innovators of the Palestinian-Jewish dialogue in America, and they're in San Francisco. The final conclusion that both of us have is that you can't have understanding of another individual or another culture until you are part of it, until you meet it, and until you learn about it. And that's one of the strongest points of the dialogue process, is that in a room, I have to get to know you or the other person, and I can only do that by asking questions, and you can only learn about me by asking questions. And the longer we're together, the more we're going to learn about each other, the more we're going to find out that we have things in common and things that we don't have in common. And if we don't have that opportunity to learn about each other, we're never going to get past the stereotype stage, which is so easy to jump into. We're so much of a culture that we don't want to think before we speak, and we think it's okay to apologize after we've hurt somebody. The apology is necessary. You have to apologize. If you don't apologize, you can't move on. But we have to learn how to speak, I think, before we speak. And Americans are not taught, I mean, this is not a stereotype, it's a generalization, but Americans, and most people today in this century, we respond to news flashes, to instant messaging, to instant images. We see things fast and we respond quickly, and we don't get a chance to process anything.
Alan Potash and Lydia Khoury teach a class at the University of Illinois campus that is made up of students from Jewish and Arab descent. The class is to promote dialogue about the Middle East crisis.
This is our third semester of teaching this class. It's in the Intergroup Dialogue program, which they offer a variety of classes on intergroup relations and getting people together to learn about each other and work out some issues. So when there was an event on campus several years ago that became a very hostile event, the Jewish students had put together an educational cultural exhibit for Yom HaTzma'ut.
What is Yom HaTzma'ut?
Israel Independence Day for Israel, and Yom Negba, or Day of Disaster, Catastrophe for the Palestinians. And the group got picketed and demonstrated against by over 250 anti-Israel people. For Israel and the Jewish people, Yom HaTzma'ut is a celebratory day, and for Palestinians and others maybe in the Arab world, it's viewed as a day of catastrophe. As a result of that, we had known of each other, and we had talked about possibly putting something together. And after that event on the Quad, she came into my office, and we agreed that we would form our own relationship and dialogue over this, and if we were able to get to a point where we could facilitate a class on this. And we did. We spent a summer together, once a week having coffee or lunch and working out some of our own issues. She's a very open individual. I feel I'm a very open individual, and we created an understanding. But the point that we have most not in common is the fact that she comes from a Palestinian descent or Palestinian background, and I come from a very strong Jewish Zionistic background, and so we try to work on that relationship. I remember back into the original dialogue about why Israel is important to me, and I shared with her that, you know, my family has not stayed in any one country for more than 100 years. I mean, my family has, you know, fled, and we can go back several hundred years to trace how they have fled from one place to another. And Israel has always been a sense of hope and a final destination for the Jewish people, whether it's in the after, or the world to come, the afterlife, or it's in the current life, that we have always used Israel as a place of hope and vision for us to end up one day. And when I explained it to Lydia in that way, in those terms, it became a little different. The whole struggle became very different for her. And her ability to empathize with my family's history, whether you call it persecution or just being, you know, outright kicked out of their homes, when we were able to parallel the fact that her father left his home in Jaffa as a child to the experience that my grandmother had living, being kicked out of her home in Kipol in the Ukraine. There's a parallel there.
Do you sense that, particularly in America, people of Jewish and Arab descent are given completely different versions of the same history?
Clearly, and history is told by the people who write the books and who experience the history from their perspective. So the Jewish version of Israeli history, even dating back from, you know, the time of the Torah, you know, it's clearly written from a very Jewish perspective. The Arab narrative or the Palestinian narrative is very different, and it's taken on different shapes over the years, just as the history of Israel and Zionism has taken on different shapes over the past, you know, 50-some years. In the class, one of the issues that we talk about is how we get to where we are. So what's our own personal immigration, our own personal story? So we all arrive in America somehow. We come from someplace. So the immigration story is very important.
I know that as a Jewish woman, I don't know nearly enough about Palestinians' perspectives. So we must talk, ask questions of one another, listen, find connections. I close with a song by Fortuna, a Brazilian Jewish singer. She sings a popular Hebrew song in the Sephardic style. For Fortuna, this song, Shalom Aleichem, recalls a golden age, before Jews and Moors were expelled from Spain, when Christians, Jews, and Arabs lived together in harmony. For IMC Radio, this is Ondine Gross. Peace be with you.
Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Yeshani, Malachi Elyon, Yimelech, Malachi Malachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Today we have two community members, activists, and friends live in the WEFT studio. Meredith Cruz and Savilla Mann both participated in demonstrations yesterday and today against two massive corporate war machines. Meredith and Savilla, welcome to WEFT, and thanks for dropping by after what I'm sure has been an exhausting and exhilarating experience. Perhaps you could describe the background for these protests and maybe how they were organized.
Okay, I think I'll take the first question. It's really good to be here. We just got in town literally 20 minutes ago, so I couldn't think of a better place to be than to come onto WEFT and share with you what was going on. If people were aware, there's two actions happening in St. Louis this weekend. The first one was on Sunday. It was at the Boeing missile factory in St. Charles, right outside of St. Louis. And the second one was happening at Monsanto Corporation. Just an overview of what was going on. The Catholic worker community there and a local St. Louis peace group called Instead of War organized protests outside of Boeing. What we did was meet in a nearby park and lead a funeral procession to the gates of Boeing. We had a group of citizen weapons inspection team, and there was 13 people who actually went ahead and got arrested that day trying to get into the plant and inspect. For me, it was a really powerful experience because everybody knows we're currently at war with Iraq, and on the day that we were dropping missiles made at this plant, Boeing's been working overtime 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. These are the missiles that go to Iraq. We were able to lead this funeral procession. We had photographs of Iraqi civilians who have been killed, urging our government not to think of them as collateral damage, but they actually have faces and names. We also had a coffin with a U.S. flag draped over to represent the loss of life unnecessary that we believe of U.S. troops. And so the message was very much, this is an unjust war, it's an unnecessary war for greed and oil, and we wanted to bring attention to the corporations that profit from that. So that was a good three-hour demonstration in front of Boeing. And I can talk more about that later. And then Monsanto, we were just there this morning. This was part of a Colombia mobilization and a whole effort to bring attention to ending corporate terror. We've heard a lot about the war on terrorism and terrorists as far as individuals and Al-Qaeda. But there's a whole other thing I think we need to be thinking about. And so Colombia mobilization organized actions in four different places across the country, corporations that are profiting from terrorizing civilians in Colombia. And Monsanto is the manufacturer of glyphosate-ready Roundup. It's the what's being used for fumigating the coca crop in Colombia, but it also gets in people's water supply on their hands. The children have rashes. Regular crops are dying. It's been a completely ineffective policy as far as eradicating drugs, and is also wreaking havoc on the Amazon rainforest. So we were protesting Monsanto's manufacturing of that, and there was also a citizen and weapon inspectors team going in to inspect dual-use chemicals. Heard a lot about that in Iraq, right? We can't, under sanctions, many, many vital things necessary for...
like bleach.
Yeah, all kinds of things were kept out of Iraq for fear of having dual use. So they were going to... What can this glyphosate-ready Roundup be used for? And in Colombia, it's very much hurting people and is a form of terrorizing the communities there. So it felt really good to be a part of both of these actions in a time when it's really frustrating and people are wondering what they can do. So that's kind of an overview of the actions.
And then maybe, Sevilla, could you talk a bit about what it felt like to be there, things you saw, voices, sounds, speeches, things like that?
Sure, many things. There were a lot of good speakers and good songs. At the Monsanto rally, one of the organizers, Steve Jacobs, sang a number of songs. One was called the Roundup Ready Blues.
Yeah.
It was Plant Columbia Roundup Ready Blues. It was very funny. And so a lot of good speakers, people really, a lot of energy and sort of excited because of the war, and this added this other level to these protests that were already planned. On Saturday was the Boeing demonstration, and that was in St. Charles, Missouri, which is just west of St. Louis, where the Boeing plant is. We met at DuSable Park along the Missouri, and we had lunch. We heard speakers and the people who were going to do the weapons inspections organize themselves. We then held a funeral procession with puppets, some cheerful puppets, but the march was quiet. With drum beats, you know.
Charlie King tells us of the dangers of puppets, so we heard that last evening.
Puppets are dangerous, that's why we had them. They're subversive. We had some nice subversive puppets. What we did was we marched through the town of St. Charles, just a mile, and then across the interstate, which was blocked by the police there, to the Boeing plant, which is in a very nondescript warehouse-type building, just along the interstate there. When we arrived at the Boeing plant, our organizers sounded a siren on their bullhorns, and we all lay down in the road for 2 minutes to...
Yeah, it was kind of like an air raid siren.
It was an air raid type.
Bombs were being dropped. I mean, we were right in front of a missile plant to kind of think about what would be happening, which was happening at that very moment in Iraq.
And so we did that. Then we got back up. We went and stood outside the Boeing gates. It's a big, massive warehouse set back from the road with a huge gate around it with barbed wire. So we marched up to the gate. And at this point, we stood there for several hours. And our weapons inspectors negotiated with the police and the people inside the fence there. The rest of us chanted and sang. We did another die-in at one point. There were kids there, old people, young people, many people.
One woman did the whole thing on crutches.
Yeah, she walked there and back. I thought for sure she would take the bus that was following us, but she didn't. While we were there, there was... and there were maybe 300 people there. There was... A rather intense pro-America contingent rally near us, about maybe 70 people who were saying really ugly things to us. And
we had a similar experience on North Prospect this weekend as well. So.
Yeah.
This was one of the worst I've ever experienced. This was your prostitutes. When we did the die-in, we hope you're dead. We hope you don't get up. It was another level. I mean, it wasn't just questioning our patriotism. I mean, you know, we were unpatriotic and traitors. And
they weren't even trying to be legitimate.
But then it spilled over into this whole other really vengeful, hateful message.
Hippies, that kind of thing.
So we took that for about 3 hours.
Did you have media? Was there media coverage of this event?
Yes. Fox News was there to interview the pro-American contingent. We had some... Actually, yes, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch did a story on it. I had picture, everything. The next day was the Monsanto demonstration at Monsanto's corporate headquarters outside St. Louis, in suburban St. Louis. Both of these days were bright and sunny. We had clear skies and the weather was quite pleasant. So we headed out of St. Louis, about 100 of us, would you say? We gathered on the lawn in front of the Monsanto building for speakers, for some music. Steve Jacobs with his
And Steve Jacobs, for people who don't know, he spent a year in jail. He was arrested at the School of Americas demonstrating. School of Americas is a terrorist training camp. We train terrorists right here in the United States and send them to Latin America. And so, I mean, it was, I think he was powerful too, because he had actually, you know, been in jail a year for the things that he believed in. So
we're going to need to wrap up. I have, unfortunately, a short amount of time on my tiny radio segment, which I'm very thankful for, the tiny radio segment. are there websites people can go to for further information on these types of protests and the ongoing struggle?
You can check out the Columbia Mobilization, which is the group that organized these protests, at www.columbiamobilization.org.
And Witness for Peace is continually sending people down and has a long-term presence, and it's witnessforpeace.org. But just, I mean, as a parting thought, like, terrorism, that word's just thrown around a lot, and I think we need to think about, what does that mean? How are corporations complicit in this? How is our own government? I don't think my government is able to prosecute a war on terrorism when they've been funding terrorists in Colombia through the paramilitaries there for many years. So just good things to think about.
Well, thank you both for coming into the studio and stopping by
and
informing our listeners. So that wraps up IMC Radio News for this week. Contributors include Ondine Gross and Janet Lowry. If you'd like to help create this show, no experience is necessary. Just email radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820, extension 1. Contributions of the tax-deductible monetary variety are also welcome and help support the purchase of media equipment, software, and supplies. You can mail your checks to UCIMC Care of Radio News, 218 West Main Street in Urbana, Illinois, 61801. In closing, we have a sound collage gathered and produced by Janet Lowry with music and voices from protests which took place in our community on Thursday against the war in Iraq. Until next week, take care and peace.
Measure that was going to cut $15 billion out of veterans programs over the next 10 years. You want to go to the Disabled American Veterans website, you can find that out. That's what that's about. The Republican Party is trying to fight this war on the cheap. They're not willing to recognize the existence of vets that are still suffering from health problems that they had in Vietnam and from the Gulf War. Peace!
because the war doesn't make any sense. We didn't even give diplomacy a chance. So I think that it's necessary for us as citizens of the United States to keep our military personnel from having to go and die for causes that are unjust.